So today is May 25th, we said it's the 35th day of the Omer. This is our second session Sunday morning on the Mishnah at the beginning of Perek Shmini.
So next week here.
And the week after.
And the week after also.
Yes, and that's
even
it.
Even if it's before Shavuot.
Even though it's Erev Shavuot. Yes,
Erev
Shavuot. So it seems.
Yeah.
So Perek Shmini of Masechet Brachot, we're going over the Mishnah with the questions. And here we go. Shlosha sha'achlu ke'ehad chayvim lezamen. Let's just remember some points of grammar that we all know, just to make sure that in this Mishnah, some of the present participles, the present tense verbs that are in the masculine plural, some of them end with a nun and not with a mem. For example, the very first line, Shlosha shachlu kehad hayavin, and it doesn't say hayavim. And we've learned that already, it's just a review, that indeed in Mishnei Akibru, there's an influence of Aramaic, and in many cases from the Aramaic comes this structure that the mem, the final mem in the masculine plural, turns into a nun. It's not a mistake. That's Mishnei Akibru. The mistake is the opposite. That's my voice.
Still rolling tape.
He's talking about the nun,
yeah,
that ends chayuvin instead of chayuvim.
By the way, just to teach a halacha, when I ran to get a drink of water, I didn't say a bracha over the water. Oh, that's a good point. Even if we had said Birkat HaMazon, I still wouldn't have said a bracha over the water, because it wasn't for the purpose
of
quenching my thirst. It was simply for the purpose of getting rid of the impediment in the throat. Just like if I was taking medicine and drinking water, I wouldn't say a bracha over the water. So anyway, I'm saying that the converse is a mistake. If you find in the Mishnah that the masculine plural has a mem at the end, that's a mistake. That's a result of copyists during the course of 1,800 years of changing the Mishnah Hebrew back to what they know of the form of Biblical Hebrew. So it really always should be ending in a nun when we're talking about masculine plural.
What is the right one?
In the Mishnah, it's Mizamnin, Hayavin, Anashin.
That's a different Mishnah language.
That's the language of the Mishnah.
The Mishnah, right. Yeah.
Okay, so with that behind us, we can begin in the Mishnah. So one of the very first things we said to understand the structure of the Mishnah, obviously has three parts, right? It has the introduction, Shlosha Shachlu Kehad Chayvim Lezamen. And then there's two additional parts that bring us details or exceptions. The one begins with achal and ends with mizamnim alehen.
Yeah, that's the second part.
And then the third part is again achal, again ending with mizamnim alehen. And you see parts two and three are parallel.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. Don't need me really to go into that. Okay, let's go back to the beginning of the Mishnah. Shlosha shachlu ke'ehad. We noticed that it could have left out the word echad. It could have said shlosha shachlu chayavin lezamen. And the question is, why does it say shlosha shachlu ke'echad? What does that teach us? Everyone see what I'm saying? So what do you guys say?
They have to eat the same food, the same kind of the same kind of food and sit by the same table.
Ah, so you said two things.
Yeah.
You said they have to eat the same type of food, they have to sit at the same table.
Sit in the same room, yeah.
So I would object to one thing you said and accept the other thing you said.
They sit at the same table.
Right. They don't have to eat the same food, right? You can have lox and I can have cream cheese.
It has to be different food, yeah.
No. It could be different, it could be the same.
It could be different, yeah.
Right? But they have to eat as one. They have to eat at the same time.
same
time. So the argument would be if I ate what was sufficient, falls under the condition for Birkat Achrona, you're saying that still Birkat HaMazon supersedes it because I'm eating as a group?
No, wait a second. Forget about the difference between Birkat HaMazon and Bracha Achrona. We're all having bread. We're all having a bread meal. We're talking about Birkat HaMazon, right? Zimun. Talking about Birkat HaMazon.
Yeah.
But let's say that at this table, two people were sitting. They washed. They said Hamotzi. They ate their meal and they're sitting around kibbutzing. And then someone else comes over and brings his bread. He washes and he eats. And while he's eating, they have already finished. They didn't say Birkat HaMazon yet, but they're already finished. Then the question is, are they Hayavim B'Zimun? The answer is no, because they didn't eat Ke'echad. They have to eat kechad. Now there's going to be halachic questions. What does exactly mean?
Yeah.
What if they had, if the two of them were eating the last bite and then the other one came? Okay, so that's the borderline cases. But the basic halacha is they have to eat in some sense kechad. Right? Didn't eat kechad, no zimun. Even if they happen to be sitting at the same table. Okay. So shloshach shachlu kechad chayavin lezamen. Let's ask what it means, lezamen. What exactly is that? We don't think we know the answer, right?
The imitation,
the beginning of Birkat HaMazon, right?
Yeah.
But it's actually more than that. The Zimun is the introduction to say Birkat HaMazon as a group.
Yeah.
The point is to say it as a group, which means, at least in the time of the Mishnah, that one says Birkat HaMazon, the others listen and say, Amen. That the whole matter, I think we've discussed once in the past, the matter of Barov Am Hadrat Melech. Barov Am, in the rove of the Am, in the many of the people, is the Hadrat Melech, is the glory of the king. As the more people that combine together to do a mitzvah, the more glory this is for Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's the reason why if you're a guest at someone's house on Friday night and they say, do you want to make kiddush for yourself? The answer should be, no, Barov Am Hadrat Melech. I'm going to take part in your kiddush. Because the more we do it as a group together, the more glory there is for Kodesh Baruch Hu. And even though there is this Ashkenazi minhag of every family making kiddush alone, that minhag is really not a libud hilchata. It's really not the proper halacha. Everyone should participate in one kiddush. So the same thing here. The proper way, at least in the time of Mishnah, to say Birkat HaMazon is one leads the Zimun, and that same person says Birkat HaMazon, everyone else is quiet, and says Amen. I'm not a big expert why it developed differently in our day, that everyone says Birkat HaMazon separately, but still in our day, we know that many times you hear that the person who's misamin waits to say the bracha, the chatima, at the end of each bracha, until everyone else is finished, so everyone else can say amen. What we're trying to do is to hold the stick by both ends, to say Birkat HaMazon alone, but still to say it together. Together in the sense that we're saying amen on the chatima of each of the four brachot of the mizamen. I'll just say that parenthetically, Sfardim don't do that. The Sfardim, they say that if you choose to say Birkat HaMazon in your own words, then you don't say amen to the mivarech, because that's tarte de satra. You're contradicting yourself. I mean, either you're saying it or you're doing it through him, but you can't do both. But the Ashkenazim try to do both. That's our custom. So really, when the Mishnah is talking about saying Birkat HaMazon ke'echad, not just eating ke'echad, but saying it ke'echad, saying it as one. Okay. Let's go...
Does that law go also for the 10 people, if there's 10 people to say Elikeinu, the other we say Elikeinu?
Yeah, the same thing. We'll see the Mishnah discusses that later on.
To eat ke'echad, the 10 people.
Right, to what degree the 10 have to eat ke'echad is a question I am not expert on. I don't know exactly. Right. I don't know exactly. Okay. So, the next question I asked was about the matter of Shlosha. Shlosha shachlu ke'echad chayavim l'samen. And when we hear this language, three that ate together, so the question is, what about two, what about one, and what about four, and what about six? So what's the answer?
At least.
Say it again? At least, right? The answer is lefachot.
Yeah.
Commissioner had have said, really should have said, lefachot, shlosha shachlu kechad chayvim
l'samen. At least.
That of course, four and five and six and seven and eight, they also have an obligation, lizamen together. Yeah. Okay, that's pretty clear also. Let's now go to question four. So question four, actually, we already did. In question four, what requirement do you think might be implicit in the directive of the Zomin, in addition to saying the responsive formula, is what I just said.
Yes.
Is everyone saying Amen to the bracha, to the chatima of the Mizomin. Question five.
What was the answer to four?
Four is that it's not just a matter of saying the formula of introduction, it's also a matter of saying Birkat Mazon together, which means Shomea Keone, listening, as taking the place of saying. That's in the Mishnah. Again, the Sephardim don't do that today. So question five was, to which of the cases following the first appearance of the word achal does this verb apply to? It's just a matter of structure of the Mishnah. So think about that a second and bullet out the answer. Don't raise your hand.
So achal is a singular.
It is, but to what of the different cases in the Mishnah does that verb apply?
So these first three of the...
Right. You have to notice the structure. It's achal. And then what is referred to? Achal Damai, or Achal Maaseh Rishon Shnitlat Trumato, or Achal Maaseh Sheni Vekdei Shnivdu, but then from then but on, it puts its own verb in, because it's a different type of case. It's the Shamas She'achal. So that means that that part of the Mishnah actually divides into two sections. Okay, that's true. And then number six.
So the answer is to the first three.
That's the answer. What do you think is the meaning of the conjunctive verb appended to the word maaser and to every case mentioned in the Mishnah? It's easy, just have to notice. What is it when it says, right, or. It's or. Right, it's achal damai or achal maaser rishon shnei blat shumato or maaser sheni.
Yeah.
It's or. And that just reminds us that you don't have to. In the Mishnah, you don't have to write vav, aleph vav, to mean or. The vav itself can mean an, can mean or, can mean but, can mean however.
So that's the Mishnah, not modern Hebrew.
In modern Hebrew, very usually, except in poetic Hebrew, if we mean or, we say aleph vav, a separate word, as opposed to a prefix of vav to a word. Yeah. Okay, next. Under what circumstances achal damai or maaser rishon shniat latumato or maaser sheni? In other words, what is the connection between the first section and the second section and the third of the Mishnah? I don't know if the question was clear. Perhaps not.
So these were circumstances when you would or would not have a simon.
Circumstances when you would or... And what exactly the circumstance? Let's say achal damai. So what's the case exactly? What's exactly the scenario that's happening on the table?
So we weren't clear on this either, whether it refers to if you have two people who there's no question about what they ate, and one person who ate one of these things or fits in one of these categories, then do you have a simun? Or could it be each of the three people?
That's what I meant. That's the question.
Oh, so yes.
Very good. In other words, Shlosha shachlu kechad chayvim lezamen, it says, and then I would have expected, perhaps, to have the next part of the Mishnah begin with the plural verb, achlu damai. If they all ate damai, then what's the law? Mizamnim. But it doesn't say that. It says achal in the singular. And it might give you the impression that it means that if one of the three ate, then the other two are allowed to lizaminilim. The other two are allowed to include him. But that would imply that if two ate of these questionable foods, or even three, that might imply that, no, that's no good. It has to be only one. It has to be in the singular. So that's exactly the question that I have in this sheet, which I gave out to, but I didn't give out to you, right?
No.
Oh, here.
That's exactly the question. So let's read. This is the second half of the page, the Hagot Bechidushim of Rabbi Eliezer, the Av Beit Din of Rad and Amsterdam. Rad I've never heard of, but Amsterdam I've heard of. right? And I don't know what century he was in. I'm pretty sure it's either the 17th, 18th, or 19th.
Was it at that time that, you know, he has all these prefaces, you know,
God.
You know, gone and all that.
Yeah.
I've seen that nowadays, but does this go, does that practice, is this not sort of great inflation that's current? Was this from way back when?
It's very interesting that you say that.
Broad.
I do think this in the last 100 years.
Rotterdam.
Yeah.
It says Broad by Amsterdam.
Broad. Broad is, there's a city Broad?
Yeah, that's
with the back.
The plenty cities called Broad.
Broad.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So apparently he moved. It says he was
a Beit Din
in Rhodes right and in Amsterdam. I just want to highlight what Amiram just said. It's customary in our day to give a lot of different honorific titles. Harav, Hagaon, Hakadosh, Amifrosam, etc., etc., etc. And I'll just tell you that in the yeshiva that I went to, the Rosh Yeshiva were very, very, very against this. Very against this. There does seem to be an inflation of titles in our day. Yeah. So anyway, Rabbi Eliezer of Broad in Amsterdam says the following. This is on by Perek Zion. In the brackets, the bottom there. He says, Achal demai v'chulei. Right? You ate the mai, etc. He's just pointing out that he's talking about this part of the Mishnah. And he says, Nirah dehei hei. Hei hei is hu hadin. It appears that the same is true. Imachlu shloshtan. Midvarim elu. Dechashiv beresha. Translation. It appears that the same is true if 8-3 from these things that are mentioned in the Reisha, mentioned in the beginning of the Mishnah, whether it's Damai, whether it's Maaseh Rishon. Afilu Haki, the second to last phrase, Aleph Pei Hei, is Afilu Haki, even thus, Mizamnin.
Yeah.
But then, of course, you have a Kusha. If that's the Halakha, why does it say Achal and not Achlu? Why isn't this saying not the post? He has to answer the Kushan now. So he says, beginning of the next line, V'hadetani achal, and that it writes, quote, achal, end yeah. quote, l'ravuta de seifa, to teach you something in the seifa, to teach you something in the end of the Mishnah. It's the grammatical form achal instead of achlu, is written in the Reisha, the beginning of the Mishnah, not because it's completely fitting to the Reisha, but because of the parallelism between the Reisha and the Sefer, the beginning and the end, and there's a point that has to be made in the end of the Mishnah that requires the use of the singular verb. And what do we mean by that? Well, let's look at the Mishnah. At the end of the Mishnah says, the middle of the third line, Acha avali machal tevel. If he ate tevel, or if he ate these other things, you can't be mizamen, right? So he says, it uses the singular, because he wants to tell you that even if one, achal tevel,
yeah.
you can't make a zimun. So, and in the Reisha, it uses the same language of achal to maintain the parallelism, but in the Reisha, really, the law is different. The law is there that even if all three of them ate these questionable foods, your mizanim lehem. That's his first answer. His second answer is different.
One says for the other, mizanim lehem.
Say it again, please.
One says it, is
right.
It,
right.
And the other says yotzi.
Yeah, so his first opinion,
yeah.
just to repeat and to summarize, his first opinion is that...
one eats regular, and the other one...
That even if all three ate the mai, and even if all three ate these questionable foods, you can still be mizamnim
aleihem.
Yeah. But afterwards he actually says, I can read it differently also. In other words, it's a safek, so it's not clear. I just don't want to spend more time in it because I'm afraid we won't get to the rest of the Mishnah.
Okay. Who's the afilu,
what? The very end here, at the
yeah.
first line, afilu hachi, which means even thus. Hachi is hei chaf yud. Afilu hachi. Okay, so I'm going to put that aside and go back to the questions on the Mishnah. So we had reached, I think, question 7 and 8 went together. 9. What is the meaning of the phrase mizamnim alehem? We already did that. It means you include them in your zimun.
Yeah.
They can be included in
you
the three.
You include the others who eat the zima.
Yeah, even they ate. Though they ate this questionable food. And we got to question 10. According to the verses and commentary that we saw above, what is Maaseh Rishon? That's an easy question. Just to remind everyone, what is Maaseh Rishon?
The first tenth to the Levites.
First tenth to the Levites, right. And question 11 was, is it Kodesh? And here there was a machloket. If I made a mistake and said it is, if I said it is, then I was wrong. Did I say it is?
No, you said it isn't.
Oh, okay. So it's not Kodesh. What is Kodesh is the part of it that will go to the Kohen. Right? Because within the Maaseh you give to the Levi, part of it the Levi has to give to the Kohen.
Yeah.
And therefore, the deen is, even before you give it to the Levi, there's still a part in it that since it's ultimately go to the Kohen, that part is already Kodesh. Not the whole thing, just a part of it. And that's why our Mishnah talks about the fact, about the situation that Maaseh Rishon Shenitla Trumato. Maaseh Rishon, that the Israelite, already took out of it the part that would go to the Kohen. Therefore, any part that would be Kodesh is already nullified. And that what's left is not Kodesh. And that's why the law is Mizamnim Alehem. Because even though you, as a Israelite, should not, could not eat that Maaseh, but still it's not Kodesh. You're eating something you're not supposed to eat, but you're not violating the law of kochim. Right? So let's say it's a lower level of avira. So now we get to 12. We just did 12. I said, what further act must be done upon the Maaseh Rishon if it's going to leave it? Let's take out the Trumat Maaseh or the Maaseh Min HaMaaseh. 13, what is the meaning of the phrase Shenitlat Trumato that we just did? Means to take out the part that's going to go to the Kohen. 14, the case of this Mishnah, who do you think? Achal Maaseh Rishon Shenitla Trumato. A Kohen, a Yisrael, or a Levite? So I've been assuming that it's a Yisrael. In other words, Yisraelim is supposed to give this to the Levite who gives part to the Kohen. What if the Yisrael ate it himself? Well, if he really took part off that goes to the Kohen, he didn't eat Kodesh, and he ate something he's not supposed to eat, but the law is that Mizamnim Alehem. So I just want to say something. This Mishnah was interpretly different. Let me say it more clear. This Mishnah was differently interpreted by the Gemara. The Gemara has a very, very complicated way of learning this Mishnah, which is not pshat, and perhaps I just don't know enough. I don't know why the Gemara made the effort it made to learn the Mishnah differently, but apparently we learn it straightforwardly, that it's talking about Maaseh Rishon, regular Maaseh Rishon, Shenit La Trumato, and it's eaten here by Yisrael, which he shouldn't do, just like he shouldn't eat the Mai. Then we have to ask ourselves question 15. Why is it necessary to say, or what is the point of saying, that Achal Maaseh Rishon Shenitla Trumato Mizamnim Alehem? Why would one have thought otherwise? And that's a hard question. Because we usually say that the Mishnah won't say anything unless it's necessary to say, unless it's debatable, unless it's problematic, unless you would think differently. So would we think differently concerning this case of Maaseh Rishon? And as long as you took out the Chuma, it's not Kodesh. So what's the point of saying Mizamnim Alehem? Of course. But it's not of course, because it's still a sore. It's still a sore to eat Maaseh Rishon.
You still have to eat it in Jerusalem or something.
Oh no, that's the next point. That's Maaseh Sheni.
Oh, Maaseh Sheni, yeah. Oh, that's Maaseh Rishon.
Yeah.
Why is it? If you've already separated out the portion to give to the Levi, what's forbidden?
The Levi has to eat it.
The Levi has
you
to
eat it.
So you're... I thought these are all permitted circumstances in the first line.
Ah.
second part.
So they're not. Again, it says achal damai in the middle of the first line.
Right.
You're not allowed to eat damai.
Okay.
The law is you have to take trumot masrot before you can eat damai. And then it's no longer damai.
Mm-hmm.
But damai is only a safek. Right? Trumot masrot might have been taken out, and then it's really completely kosher to you. Perhaps they weren't. There's a gzeirat de rabbanan that you have to take trumot masrot from damai. But the law is if you didn't, and you ate it, then mizamnim.
Okay. How about maser rishon?
So maser rishon shnitlat trumato. You're not allowed to eat it. You have to give it to the Levite.
I thought you have already. That's not what they're saying here. This isn't. It's not your 90. The remaining 90%.
No. Maser rishon. The maser rishon is the 10%.
Oh, okay.
Right? So 10%.
Okay.
You have the 10% that you're supposed to give to Levite, and part you're supposed to give to the Kohen. The part of the Kohen you took out, and you gave it to the Kohen. The part to the Levite, I don't know if you purposely are not going to give it to him, or you forgot, but anyway, you ate what belongs to him.
Okay. And so that's not, without getting, it's assumed that it's not with sharing it with you, which he can do, right? Because it's not could have.
Right. He could have given it back to you. If you gave it to Levite, he can say, I don't want it, you take it. And then it would no longer be Maaser Rishon, then it would be completely chulin, completely permitted. But this is a case in which you ate the Maaser Rishon that you're supposed to give to him. As long as you took out the part that goes to the Kohen, then even though you shouldn't have eaten it, but if you did, mizamnim aleihem.
Yeah.
So I can still understand why the Mishnah says mizamnim aleihem, because I would have thought perhaps not mizamnim, because it doesn't belong to me. I should have given it to him, to the Levite. But the question is more difficult when we get to Maaser Shini. Here it says, Maaser Shini, you did the pidyon, right? Maaser Shini and Hekdes Shiniftu. It looks like you did everything I have to do. Here's Maaser Shini. I took my 10% to eat Yerushalayim. It's too far for me, so I was podeh. I redeemed it, took the money to Yerushalayim, fine. And the Maaser Shini, what used to be Maaser Shini, now is chulin, I take and eat it. So what's the problem? What does the Mishnah have to say? Mizamnim aleihem. Of course mizamnim, it's regular food. That's a difficult question. That's the question asked in number 17. What's the point of saying it? So that's not easy. That's not an easy question. I'll tell you the Gemara's answer. The Gemara's answer adds something that's not written. The Gemara's answer is a difficult answer because it adds extraneous material. The Gemara says it must be that when you were podeh, you neglected to pay the fee for pidyon, which we said is chomesh, 20%. You have to add 20% of the value when you're podeh maaser rishon, sheni. So the Gemara says it must be a case you didn't add the fine. And therefore you'd think that the pidyon isn't chal, the pidyon doesn't work, and it's still maaser sheni. And you'd eat it, and you'd think therefore if you ate it, you can't be mizamen, because you violated law. Maaser sheni is kodesh, has to be in Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says no. The Gemara says that it's a case of you forgot to or neglected to pay the pidyon, to pay the fine, to pay the fee of 20%. But that's the problem. It doesn't say that. So how else can we understand the Mishnah? So I have one possibility, which is not so good. It could be that there's a idea or a halakha. I wouldn't say a halakha. There's an idea that it's better to bring Maaser Shini to Yerushalayim in Itay, and the pidyon is only a second best measure. And since it's second best, you might think that there would be a law that you can't be mizamen. Kamashmala comes to teach us that you're allowed to be mizamen even on someone who didn't make the effort to take his Maaser Shini to Yerushalayim, but rather took the easy way out and did a pidyon. You're still allowed to be mizamen. It could be. My way is difficult because we don't really know. There is such an idea that it's better to take Yerushalayim than to do the pidyon. But the Gemara's way is also difficult in that it doesn't say that he forgot to pay the fee. So it's a bit difficult. It's a bit difficult, perhaps. There's a third answer that I can give to understand this, which might be the best, which is that really it's obvious that if you eat Maaser Shini, that's nifta, of course, bimizamen. It's like another other food. So why does the Mishnah say it? The Mishnah says it only for the parallel to the Seifa. Since the Mishnah wants to maintain symmetry between the resh and the seifa. And in the seif it has to say, end of the second to last line, maaseh sheni dakti shelo nifdu, right? Maaseh sheni, that you didn't redeem them, they're ein mizamnim, and that's an important halakha. So in the resh, at the beginning of the Mishnah, it says maaseh sheni, that was nifdeh, you can't redeem them, not because it's a chidush, not because it has to be said, simply to maintain the parallelism to the seifa. That's
like
possible.
Like the Akalu answer.
Right, exactly. So that's a possibility, but again, it's not what the Gemara says. It's not what the Gemara says. Okay. Let's go to question 18. Could this shamash have eaten more or less than kazayit?
So I would guess he couldn't have eaten less. More would be fine, but this kind of goes back to what you were just talking about in the previous segment. Why bother mentioning this at all?
Right. Let's see exactly what are we talking about. We're talking about, we said it says a shamash shachal kazayit. And obviously it means if he hal kazayit or more, then misamim. Why does it have to say that? No, but here, there is an answer to your question. Why does it have to say? What's important? Why is it a chidush? Why is it an innovation? Why wouldn't you know otherwise? Why do you have to say that shamash achal kazayit, you make a zimun? There's a chidush there. It goes back to the third word of the Mishnah.
So ke'echad, that he in some way, because he was the waiter, he wasn't...
Yeah, since he's walking around, you might think he's not part of the echad, the ke'echad. He's not part of your eating.
So this doesn't indicate that he, you know, rather than taking a few fries off the plate before he gave it to you, he sat down and ate with you. In other words, he was eating while he was...
That's what the Mefarshim say. He's a shamash. Uh-huh. Shamash shamashim. Don't sit down. Like, just like today.
Okay.
Right? Would you think if you had two people around the table, would you think you'd make a zimun by calling over the waiter?
Yeah. No.
Right, no. So it's a big chidush that you can call over the waiter. If the waiter, you know, kind of took some of your food before I gave it to you. No, but really, the shamash is allowed to eat.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the halakha of lo tachsom shur b'disho. Do not muzzle an ox in his threshing. And some mefarshim say because it's just not compassionate. So the same thing with the waiter. You have to let him eat. Not from your plate.
No, I'm still very confused here where the kazayit comes from.
Very good question. Kazayit really is a halakha, but it's true throughout this halakha. Throughout this Mishnah, it's only mentioned here. But if any of these people ate less than kazayit, can't make a zimun. They have no obligation to say berakat amazon.
So
why? Just wait a second. Why? Because the verse says in Sefer Dvarim Perakhet, achalta ve...
Savata.
You have to be savata. What's the minimum of svi'ah? At least the kazayit. It's more complicated, but on one foot.
The kazayit, the translation is at least an olive's worth.
Yes.
Is there a literal translation for kazayit? Yeah. It just means that.
Kazayit, like a zayit. A zayit is an olive.
Oh, okay.
Like a
zayit. We interpreted the kazayit as like an egg.
Well, that's a big machloket. I've never seen a zayit as big as an egg, right?
That's the colossal olive.
Texas,
you know. Have you seen that in the store, the colossal olive?
The truth is, this is very interesting, that there's a big machloket in Eastern Europe. How big is a kazayit? A very, very big machloket, with a lot of books written about it. I would say that this is an area of halakha today in which the halakha is reflected, the halakha is influenced by the Zionist movement. Now that the Jewish people live in Eretz Yisrael, we can see how big a zayit is. Uh-huh. I'm serious.
Uh-huh. Asim, yeah.
And a lot of the literature in our generation is simply going back to the reality. Now, forget about, I'm sorry, I shouldn't be disrespectful, but let's put aside our intricate, contorted Talmud reasoning, and let's check how big an olive is. You know. So you have a lot of poskim today that say an olive size. You know how big it is? An olive size?
But was there, people had olives, presumably, and... Eastern Europe.
It's amazing how little they had sometimes, but even if they did, it's not just a matter of having an olive available. It's a matter of feeling that your Judaism is connected to reality. That Zionism has given Judaism a whole new level of meaning. But it's in addition to the intellectual level, there's a level of reality in which you really feel that you are related to the land which you live in, and that certain basic answers of the meaning of Torah can come from reality. And at certain points in Jewish history, that consciousness was missing. And Torah became more and more disjointed from the reality that we lived in.
Could also,
my opinion.
Could also saying it's the size of an egg be an effort to draw a defense around the law, is to say, even, you know, I know what an olive is, but to, you know, to say this to a common person, you know, I would say I'm the rabbi making this distinction, saying, you know, to those who have not seen an olive, you know, say it's an egg. I'll tell you why not.
Because that fence that you're talking about actually turns out to be a terrible leniency. Because the halacha is, for example, you have to say a bracha achuna over things you've eaten that are at least an olive size. But under that quantity, you don't have to say a bracha achuna. So if you tell me an olive size is really an egg size,
then I end up
not saying a bracha achuna when I should. So that's an example of what's called a humra da'ati di'idei kula, a stringency that actually becomes a leniency.
You would say, if you want to make it strict, you say at least a raisin, or at least a...
Yeah, but then you also come to a problem, you might be saying a bracha in a case that you don't have to say one, which is taking God's name in vain.
Uh-huh.
Oh. Have to be careful here. Okay.
Different now. In Israel, it was different now.
So anyway,
they used to teach me an egg, you know, right, when I was a kid.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there again, there's a big machloket there.
Yeah.
But what I've learned from my teachers is that think of a matchbox. If you eat a piece of cake that can fit into a matchbox, you've eaten a kazayit.
Okay. Why not just an olive?
That's a good question. It could be because olive is round. Whereas usually our slices of cake are rectangles. Mm. You have to think how much rectangle goes into an olive. Think of a matchbox. Mm. It helps.
But this is becoming more difficult now. People don't see matchboxes as often as they used to.
That's true. At least to light Shabbos candles, you have matchboxes. That's usually. Right. Okay, we're getting a little bit off the subject.
Do we bench? We get a bench also?
Yes. So let's finish up. Where were we? So we were talking about
Shamash.
About the Shamash, right. So the Reisha says that Shamash Shachal Kazayit, you make a Zimun, even though he's a Shamash. And that brings us to question 20. What is a bit awkward or superfluous in the context of the third part of this Mishnah in the use of the phrase Hashamash Shachal Pechot Mikazayit? At the end of the Mishnah says that the Shamash Shachal Kazayit Mizamnim. I'm sorry, no. The Shamash they ate Pechot Mikazayit. The Shamash they ate less than a Kazayit
in Mizamnim.
But that's kind of, that's awkward wording. Why? Why is it really problematic to say that the Shamash Shachal Pechot Mikazayit, you can't make a zimun with him?
Because you would know from the fact that he didn't eat enough.
Right. Because so then they do it with Shamash. Anyone who ate Pechot Mikazayit. Uh-huh. Why just Shamash? The answer probably is, again, the symmetry of the Mishnah. That line is not written for itself. It's written for the Reisha. The Reisha says Shamash Shachal Kazayit. You make a zimun. In other words, it's telling you there, as long as you ate the minimum, even though he's a Shamash, he says zimun. That's a big chidush, because he's not sitting with you. And to make it parallel, to make two symmetrical parts of the Mishnah, so the second part of the Mishnah mentions the Shamash again, but really the halacha is anyone that ate Pechot Mikazayit, you can't be mizamen. Okay. So we're getting to the home stretch here, turning to the second page of our questions. And we just answered question 21. How could we nevertheless understand the use of the above-mentioned phrase? We said it's just part of the symmetry of the Mishnah. And question 22, we've already answered also. I'll just say it again. What is the relationship between sections 2 and 3 of the Mishnah? And the answer simply is that they're two sides of the same coin. It first says, and it's parallel word for word almost, it says in what cases you are mizamim, what cases you aren't mizamim. And the reason this parallel is set up, you might ask yourself, why does the Mishnah put words that don't belong just for the parallelism? And the answer probably is that this was originally an oral text. An oral text make an effort to maintain a structure that will be easy to perpetrate and pass on. That's probably the answer. Okay. So at the end, we'll just talk about the Kutim. So, did you get to read the verses in Sefer Melachim? No. So I'll just tell you quickly. So Sefer Melachim, we're near the end of Sefer Melachim. It talks about the fact that Am Yisrael, at the end of Bayit Rishon, I shouldn't even say the end, during most of Bayit Rishon, was divided into the northern and the southern kingdoms. Right? Amlechet Yisrael in the north and Amlechet Yudah in the south. And Amlechet Yisrael was exiled by the Assyrians 100 years before the destruction of Mamlechet Yudah in the south and the destruction of the temple, 100 years before. Or if the first temple was destroyed in 586 before the Common Era, so 100 years before that, which is 686 before, already Mamlechet Yisrael was exiled by Sancheriv of Assyria.
Were the people in the northern areas coming down to Yerushalayim?
Many of them were. Many of them were.
Okay.
That's the only reason that we might think that some of us are not only from Yehuda and Levi, but some of us also might be from other tribes, because I said what I shouldn't have said. I give background. The 10 tribes in the north who were exiled were completely lost. Mm-hmm. And all Jews today are descendant of the southern kingdom, which is Yehuda, Levi, and some Binyamin. Why might there be remnant of other tribes in us? Because before the destruction of this northern kingdom, there were hundreds of thousands of exiles who fled south to take refuge in Yehuda. And so we do have some Jews from other tribes who are probably still left. So anyway, the psukim say that after Sancheriv exiled the Yisraelim from the northern kingdom, mm-hmm. he didn't want to leave the land barren, because then it might be invaded by another nation. So he brought exiled peoples from other lands and settled them in that place which we today call, and was called then also, Shomron, Samaria. And one of the nations he brought were the Kutim, from the land of Kuta, which is someplace around Ethiopia. I'm not exactly sure, someplace in Africa. He brought all the Kutim there and settled them there. And the verses go on to say that the Kutim adopted some degree of Jewish practice from the few Jews that were left in the area, under their belief that if you want to live peacefully in the land, you have to adopt the customs of the god of the land. So they adopted the customs of the god of the land. And then in Second Temple time, there is a question: to what degree are these Kutim considered Jews? They adopted some Jewish customs, others they didn't, and at a certain point in Second Temple history, they were considered to be almost full Jews. And what does our Mishnah say about them? Right? The Mishnah says that the Kuti mizamim alav. Right? That's what it says? It's two Jews and one Kuti. So the Kutim are enough for a Jew to be counted, right, for a minyan, for a zimun. But the Rambam, and with this we'll end, the Rambam explains to us the halakha has changed since this Mishnah was formulated.
Later changed, yeah.
It's later changed. Let's just read the Rambam, which is over here. There's the Rambam in Pirusha Mishnah. So beginning in the third line where the bracket is, over here. It says, "V'kan niverer lecha ma hem hakutim." And now we will explain to you who are the kutim. V'hu sha'am shivi sancheriv mikuta, v'hu shivim barei shomron. And that is that the people that brought sancheriv, in other words, sancheriv brought from Kuta, and he settled them in the cities of Shomron. He idaleim akatuv.
Who was Sancheriv?
Sancheriv was the head of Assyria, who exiled the northern kingdom. The northern kingdom.
He was not Jewish.
He was very not Jewish. Extremely not Jewish.
Not Jewish.
Yeah. He'id aleihem ha-ketuv, testified concerning them, the verses in Sefer Melachim testify concerning these people, quote, et Hashem hayu yirayim, et Eloheihem hayu avdim. God they were fearing, but their idols they were worshipping. In other words, they were syncretists. How do you say that? Anyone know?
Not a familiar word. Say it again.
They had a syncretic religion, which means some from A and some from B. Like a Chinese restaurant. Ella she'archu lehem hayamim. Rather, time passed. Ad shelamdu et haTorah, v'pirshua kipshuta, until they learned the Torah, and they explained it kipshuta. And there were some problems in their interpretation. They didn't accept the Masorah of Chazal at all points, but at least they started learning Torah. V'mitzvah shechaziku ba hayu medaktekim ba u'machzikim ba amod. And we have a Masorah from Torah Shavuot Peh that says that the mitzvot that they took upon themselves, they were very, very exacting to do and to maintain. That's a good thing, right? They were good. Vayu muchzakim shemaminei hadat, and they were considered to be maminei hadat. They were considered to be believing Jews at a certain point in Jewish history. Miyachadim. Miyachadim means monotheist, language of liyachid, to make one. They made God one. Miyachadim. Ve'einam avdim avodah zarah. They didn't worship avodah zarah, so they were good Jews. And that's what our Mishnah says. They can be mizamin alakuti. Rather, something happened. Ad shechakru hachamim achareihem v'matzu makdishim et har mikadshim et har grizim. Until investigated our sages concerning them and found them sanctifying har grizim. Har grizim is the high mountain right outside of the city of Nablus of Shechem. And when they investigated, they found the reason of the matter was that there was a statue of a bird, of a yonah, of a dove on Har Grizim, which they were worshipping as Avodah Zarah. The Nodashim of the Avodah Zarah, and it became known that they are idol worshippers. Va'az horidum bima'alat goyim gemorim l'chol divrem. And then our sages lowered them to the level of complete goyim in all matters. So the halakha changed, no longer consider them as Jews, but consider them only as goyim, which means ein mizamnim aleihem, and many other halachot as well. V'chol ma shetimsa b'mishna minyanei hakutim shemareh shem mulim min hagoyim ugurim Yisrael. And anything that you find in the Mishnah, in the matter of the kutim, that shows that they are above a level of goyim, but below a level of Jews, that they're a middle level, says the Rambam, kagon amram az mizamnim et im hakuti. For example, our Mishnah that says you're allowed to be mizamin with the kuti, v'kuti hamivarech v'zulatam, and all different halachot, another Mishnah about kuti that's mivarech, another halachot, kol ze kodim shebatku achareihem. All of these halachot are prior to the Hachamim's investigation of the situation. Aval mi shebatku achareihem umatsu kamo shamarnu. But since, and it's after the Hachamim checked and found what we just told you above, hareihem guim in a goyim mode. Behold, they are even worse than the goyim extremely.
Fast forward to the 1980s, 1990s, and the Ethiopian Jews brought to Israel. Where would we rank those in this argument?
Well, the Kutim were a separate case. It was simply a historical circumstance. Every case has to be checked. What are their origins? And if they took upon themselves Judaism, well, the Ethiopians had to be checked out, you know, exactly what their case was. And there's a big machloket to the Ethiopians. Rabbi Yosef paskin one way, paskin the other way.
In the Gemara, they had a big advantage because they believed in Torah Shebaksav.
The Kutim believed
in Torah Shebaksav. They did not believe in Torah Shebaal Peh. Only right, that, Torah Shebaksav.
That could be
at a certain
stage.
In the Torah that's written, not in the Torah that is studied. Right. That the Jews used to study in the way.
So let me just give a little bit of additional background. So the Kutim are what we say in English, the Samaritans, the Shomronim in Hebrew. Right. And in the New Testament, when it talks about the Good Samaritan, it's exactly the story of a Samaritan, of a Kuti, right? And to this very day, from that story comes the whole question on the matter of the Good Samaritan. At what stage are you obligated legally or morally, to risk your life to a certain degree, or to make an effort to save the life of someone else. It's based on that story in the Christian writings, and it's the kutim we're talking about.
The Samaritan in that story wasn't risking his life, was he? He was just helping somebody that the...
So I admit I never read the story inside. I never read the story inside. I should. I didn't.
This is from what I remember. Here,
Okay.
And the kutim here, Rambam has distinguished as being lower than an average goyim.
Right. The commentators ask, why did the Rambam say, what does that mean to be better than, or sorry, worse than the average goy? So some commentators means that the kutim have a chazakah, they consider to be always ovdei avodah zarah, whereas another goy might be ovdei avodah zarah, might not be. But the kutim we know are ovdei avodah zarah. That's what the Rambam says. By the way, the Samaritans still exist. Today it's a small, small group of 400, 500 people living in two cities in Israel, living in Shechem, right by Har Gerizim, and also living in Holon, I think. And they still have Torah scrolls. They're written in their ancient script, and they have a basic Judaism that's a little bit different than ours, but they do worship a certain Judaism. And they're actually in dire straits today. They're such a small tribe, and they're torn between the Jews and the Palestinians. They're disappearing very quickly. And the famous thing in Israel is to go see the Samaritans celebrate Pesach. They're makriv, they slaughter the Korban Pesach on Har Gerizim. My wife once went and saw it.
So there are some memories from them?
Yeah, there's 300, 400 of them left.
Har Gerizim?
Har Gerizim is a big mountain outside Shechem, outside Nablus.
They didn't intermarry, and
they try not to intermarry, but today how many are left? And they're gradually losing it. I shouldn't say gradually. Today they're quickly losing their identity.
Was Har Gerizim the mountain where the curses or the blessings were?
By the way, Har Gerizim and Har Ebal are mentioned in the Torah where the Jewish people, when Yeshua brings the land. So which is which? I don't remember. You remember which is which? Har Gerizim and Har Ebal, which is the blessing, which is the curses?
Okay, I'll take that out too.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, so that's it. Next week we said breakfast, courtesy of David.